Hello, welcome to another edition of The Debate. I'm Kevin Tapley. The Shanghai Cooperation Organization, the SCO, was founded by the leaders of China, Kazakhstan, Kyrgyzstan, Russia, Tajikistan, and Uzbekistan. This year's summit was significant given the sensitive situation in the region, something China has said, such as the crisis in Syria, especially given Russia and China, two permanent members of the UN Security Council, and their stance opposite that of their other veto members at the UN. In this debate, we're going to discuss the role that SCO plays, whether this summit would entail greater cooperation, and also include Iran's role as an important non-member state.
An international organization called the Shanghai Five was formed 5 years after the collapse of the Soviet Union in 1996 to resolve the border disputes between China, Russia, Kazakhstan, Kyrgyzstan, and Tajikistan. The organization added Uzbekistan and renamed itself as the Shanghai Cooperation Organization in 2001, the same year that the U.S. invaded Afghanistan. Later, it gave the observer status to India, Afghanistan, Pakistan, Mongolia, and Iran, and named Belarus, Sri Lanka, and Turkey as dialogue partners. Over the years, the SCO's activities have expanded to military, intelligence, and energy cooperation. In 2005, the organization called on Washington to set a timeline for leaving military bases in Central Asia. As a result, the Kyrgyz parliament decided to approve a bill preventing Washington from extending its lease on the Manas Air Base beyond 2014. The base is the major hub for transferring U.S. forces and military equipment in and out of Afghanistan. This year's meeting mainly concentrated on economic development and regional security cooperation, especially the situation in Afghanistan. Syria and Iran's nuclear program were also discussed. Analysts expect the organization to take a greater role in stabilizing Afghanistan after the U.S. planned withdrawal of 2014. Kyrgyz and Tajik presidents have called for SCO's assistance to Afghanistan. Meanwhile, the Chinese, Kazakh, Kyrgyz, and Uzbek presidents expressed their support for Russia's position over a peaceful resolution of the Syrian crisis. During his address to the summit, Russia's President Vladimir Putin said Iran has the right to peaceful nuclear energy, including enrichment operations. Since establishment, the SCO has tried to promote mutual trust and benefit, equality and cooperation among its members. It's estimated that the founding and observer states make up more than one-third of the world's population. Russia, Iran, Uzbekistan, and Kazakhstan hold roughly 20% of the world's proven oil reserves and 40% of the natural gas reserves. Russia and China also wield veto power at the UN Security Council. This, in addition to an observer status at the UN General Assembly, gives the intergovernmental organization an extra way to engage more in global affairs.
Well, let me introduce our guest for this edition of The Debate. From the Asia Desk, Executive Intelligence Review, Mike Billington joins us from Arlington. And with Middle East Director of World Policy Institute, Alan Ben-Mir, who joins us from New York. Gentlemen, welcome. Mike Billington, let me start with you. The Shanghai Five grouping, originally created for the signing of the Treaty on Deepening Military Trust in Border Regions in Shanghai, that was back in 1997. Then later, a treaty that was signed a few years later on the reduction of military forces in border regions, which occurred in the summit in Moscow. But how times have changed, because the U.S.'s 2012 announcement of pivot to Southeast Asia was announced. So are we looking at these SCO countries, given that especially Russia and China looking closely based on the pivot, for example, announcements of Southeast Asia from the U.S.?
Well, yes, of course. I think I should start by saying that the extraordinary shift that took place over this last week on the issue of Syria has created a circumstance, both in the United States and at the SCO, where instead of being bogged down in the threat of this illegal war being launched by Obama, which he was forced by the overwhelming outpouring of opposition from the population and clear signs that the Congress was not going to approve his war. So he was put in a position where he had to accept this very sane offer from Putin, and that now we have a hiatus which might lead to a solution, or at least it's put off the war. And the result is that we can talk about what we should have been talking about anyway, both in Washington and at the SCO conference. And you can see that beginning already. Instead of having to basically batten down the hatches to deal with the threat of a war in the coming weeks, a war which Mr. LaRouche warned would very quickly have become a war with Russia, a thermonuclear war, very likely. Instead of that, they were able to focus on development, on dealing with the horrendous drug crisis, the new opium war, as Russia's drug czar Viktor Ivanov has called it, a new British opium war out of Afghanistan, to try to deal with these security issues. But even then, to deal with that requires bringing about great infrastructure development projects. And this is now the main subject of that conference, which it should be. Xi Jinping, on his way to Kyrgyzstan, stopped in Kazakhstan and called for a new Silk Road development project, a development corridor from China through Central Asia into Europe. This kind of development corridor, new cities, new agriculture, not just oil and oil pipelines, as important as that is, but also nuclear power cities, new development capacities for developing raw materials in these regions. It's this kind of great project approach which has to be brought about in Asia and, in fact, internationally, if we're going to get out of the current very rapid collapse into a global economic disaster and possibly global warfare.
Well, let's break that up a little bit, Alan Ben-Mir, because our guest Mike Millington talked about Syria and how that played a significant role in this summit. You know, there have been lots of speculation about what this war is all about, and I got to throw this in, and I'm wondering whether you have a reaction as to the news that this war on Syria is all about this gas pipeline that Qatar wants to have. And my question to you is, are there behind-the-scenes maneuvers that are taking place in terms of SCO members, in particular Russia, regarding some of the other countries? We can talk about the U.S., we could talk about Qatar in this case, or Saudi Arabia, as to whether there's that type of maneuverism going on regarding Syria?
You know, I think we should put things in the proper perspective. The conflict, the civil war in Syria, started with a very peaceful demonstration. Syrians simply wanted more freedom, wanted the opportunity, wanted, you know, human rights. And these demonstrations were met with extreme violence, and which obviously escalated for the last 30 months, leading to the death of more than 110,000 Syrians, 3 million displaced, internally displaced, and more than 2 million refugees. And pretty much the international community was watching this disaster unfolding in Syria with equanimity. So when the guest, your guest in, from Washington, suggests that America's war, America did not wage a war in Syria. And as a matter of fact, I was one of those who've been calling on the United States to do something to stop the slaughter, be that by the government or the rebel for that matter. So there was no American war. So we have to understand that to suggest that all of this is happening because Qatar or someone else want to have a pipeline or this, it is completely out of context and has absolutely no merit. And if I may, on the question of the Russian proposal, I think it's nothing but a ploy to play for more time. Just remember, Russia, along with Hezbollah and to a great extent Iran itself, have been supplying Assad with weapons, ammunition, training, and soldiers on the ground, specifically from Hezbollah, for the last year. Let me just finish the sentence. So the truth of the matter is, this war is getting out of control and has to come to an end. Now, talking about chemical weapon at this stage, I would have liked to see this work out. But remember this, every expert is saying it will take years and years before you can destroy such weapons. And in the interim, I want to ask, what is going to happen to the Syrian people who are dying by the thousands every single month? We need to end the slaughter, and that is really my focus, and it should be the focus of the international community.
Very well. Our focus for this debate is the SCO and the significance that it plays, so I'd like to leave out Syria. But Mike Millington, we've talked about Russia, and of course Iran's President Hassan Rouhani is there, and the two have converged in terms of the Iran's civilian nuclear program, and Russia obviously very much behind that. Do you foresee Russia's enthusiasm to have been upped a level or a notch or two because of the way that Syria has affected, obviously, the nature of the relationship that Russia has with the U.S. in particular?
Well, I don't think that's affected it. I think Russia was committed to helping. I'm sorry.
Yeah,
I think Russia was firmly committed to helping Iran develop its peaceful nuclear power facilities. In fact, I believe they intend to turn over operation of the Bushehr nuclear facility in Iran to Iran sometime in the next few weeks. And there's been some discussion of possibly a contract for a second reactor, although that hasn't been confirmed. I think these policies, this kind of the new Silk Road, the nuclear power development, this is something that my organization, Mr. LaRouche's organization, have insisted that it's this kind of leap into a new technology platform, a nuclear, thermonuclear-driven infrastructure and industrial development platform for the entire world, which is absolutely required if we're going to break out of what is, in fact, the all-out collapse of the transatlantic financial system, which is threatening to bring the entire world into not only an economic collapse, but indeed a nuclear war confrontation with Russia and perhaps even with China. You have to look at the Syria issue and these development questions as a totality. They're connected. The problem we're facing is that the financial institutional oligarchy centered in London and Wall Street are very much aware that the entire Western financial system is absolutely bankrupt. It's collapsing. There's no way to save it. It's sitting on top of $quadrillion worth of worthless speculative paper. And in their view, in order to prevent the United States under new leadership from joining forces with Russia and China and Iran and other countries like that on development concepts, they want to instigate divide and conquer warfare. The Middle East is a cockpit for that kind of conflict between the United States and Russia, which is what is desired by the financial oligarchy in London. That's the intent. It's not just to destroy Syria the way the U.S. was induced to destroy Iraq and to destroy Libya through their illegal wars there. But in fact, while they are perfectly willing to completely destroy Syria by supporting this Saudi-festered Shia-Sunni conflict and so forth, the real intent is to get the United States and Russia to be in conflict and to perhaps even go to war. In fact, we're very, very close to war, and people have to recognize that. So what the SCO is doing, and it's absolutely correct, is saying we have to focus not on just ganging up against the rest of the world, but posing development policies for the entirety of Asia, which will be recognized in America by sane people as in our interest in the United States. And this is what Mr. LaRouche has focused on. It is in our interest as a nation to act the way Franklin Roosevelt did when he came into power in the 30s. Mm-hmm. He shut down the banking system, only allowed them to open up when they could invest in long-term infrastructure development. And at this period of time, that development, in fact, will take place in Asia. Right. But it's America's interest to be part of the development of that infrastructure across Asia, especially the far east of Russia.
Well, I'd like to pick on those two, on the notion of BRICS that you put in the beginning of your statements, but what better way to do that than to break into one of the viewer comments on that very same issue. Let's take a listen to what this particular viewer said on our Facebook page.
The SCO, like the BRICS, provides a lot of opportunities to challenge U.S. hegemony. This is why the organization exists. SCO is capable of combating terrorism and security. They are the best applicable organization that needs to do more than the current global order of NATO and the UN.
Yeah, we heard about Saleh Naeem's statement there. And let me come to you, Alan Ben-Mir. The SCO, like the BRICS, provide a lot of opportunity to challenge U.S. hegemony. This in regards to the financial situation that the U.S. faces, in particular with the financial crisis all the way through to obviously it affecting Europe and the Eurozone debt crisis in particular. Do you think that there's a chance that SCO with the BRICS can pull that center of gravity of the financial world towards themselves?
I really don't think so. I mean, you have to look at the significant economic powers of the Western Hemisphere, that is the European Community along with the United States, and they remain still the anchor of the financial, the global financial system. So, you know, you can talk about, all kind of conspiracies, wars between the United States and Russia, nuclear war for that matter. All of this is completely baseless. Neither the United States nor Russia wants to fight each other. They are, in fact, cooperating on so many different levels. There is a certain conflict, of course, about Syria. But you know what? No one has monopoly on any international order, or on peace, or on security. The point here is that they need to cooperate. Look at the Security Council. What happens, for example, in connection with Syria and United Nations Security Council. It was Russia who blocked any resolution to bring an end to the carnage in Syria. So, you know, what I'm saying then, what you have certainly the financial system, be that in the United States or be that in Asia, is not perfect. But the only way you're going to level the field is by cooperating rather than placing blame on one another. That is not going to work. And as long as the United States and the European Community still, with all their financial difficulties, still maintain nearly 60% of the global financial system, then you cannot possibly dismiss that as being bankrupt. It's not bankrupt. China and India and others still buy American stocks and bonds, and they do not want to invest any money elsewhere. So one has to find, we have to ask the question, why is it? If they did not have the confidence in the American financial system, or for that matter, European financial system.
Let's switch gears here, Mike Billington, and talk about what has been announced by the U.S., their 2014 withdrawal from Afghanistan. And I'm wondering if this the end of this military occupation of that country and the closing down of that overland supply route through Russia and Central Asia to Afghanistan, will that have any kind of ramifications in terms of the relationship that perhaps the United States has with Russia?
Well, yeah, I think so. Of course, the problem is, as Viktor Ivanov, the Russian drug czar whom I referenced, as he has pointed out, you have hundreds and hundreds of heroin plants, opium factories in Afghanistan. Under the NATO occupation, Afghanistan was transformed from a country where, under the Taliban, much of the drug traffic had been shut down. I don't mean to praise the Taliban. They'd done that for business reasons. But since the occupation of Afghanistan, that country has been turned into the greatest opium drug producer the world has ever known. More drugs produced in Afghanistan every year than the world used to produce as a whole. And almost all of those drugs have been going into Russia and Eastern Europe and some into China. This is correctly called the Second British Opium War. NATO's control of that area, transforming it into this massive drug production capacity, is one of the black spots in the 21st century. One that'll go down in infamy. Of course, you still have the danger of various terrorist networks throughout the region, throughout South Central Asia, for that matter, most of whom are funded or are part of the narco-terrorist combine. So the Russians are very concerned about this, the Chinese, of course, as well. And the SCO is a good institution through which to begin to combat this. If the U.S. under Obama, if he stays in power, proceeds with the basically British-authored plan to keep troops in Afghanistan. This could cause a bigger problem, but in any case, the pullout is going to leave that country in total chaos, just as we have left Libya and Iraq in chaos. And this is going to be a very serious problem for that entire region. What I would add here is that while I don't think I need to argue with your other host about the scope of the financial disaster sweeping across Europe and sweeping through the United States, as every one of our cities is now facing the kind of disaster that Detroit is facing, where they're literally stealing the pensions and the health care from pensioners. This is a disaster. It's an economic crisis of the most massive sort. It can only be met by restoring the Franklin Roosevelt policies of basically writing off the fictitious derivative gambling debts and issuing credits for real physical development, real basic infrastructure, water, power, roads, schools, hospitals. This approach, which is what the SCO itself is now focused on in their work, which is correct, should be combined. The U.S. should be allied with these SCO countries on great development projects. We've published a report on this, which I'd be glad to get to you and to any of your viewers, on what we call the thermonuclear NAWAPA project, building a tunnel under the Bering Strait, connecting the United States to Russia, China, and Southeast Asia, building new water projects, a new canal in southern Thailand. These great development projects are the only hope that we can pull the world away from the brink of disaster. Implementing the kind of financial reforms in the United States that we got from Franklin Roosevelt in the 30s and unleashing scientific and technological development. Otherwise, we are going to break down into the kind of chaos that we've seen in every one of these countries where the U.S. under Bush and under Obama have gone in militarily and just basically laid waste to these nations.
Very well. I wish we could discuss this more. Unfortunately, we're out of time. Thank you very much. From the Asia Desk Executive Intelligence Review, Mike Billington spoke to us from Arlington. Mideast Director of World Policy Institute, Alan Ben-Mir, spoke to us from New York. Thank you so much for watching another edition of The Debate. Any questions or comments, newsroom@presstv.ir is our email address. From Mikova Tapway and the entire team in the capital, Tehran, it's goodbye.